Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my true crime darlings, to Web Sleuth Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith. With us tonight, Bessie is back. I'm my wonderful producer. She'll be doing all the heavy lifting. And later in the show, we're going to welcome Alan Prendergast. Now, he's from the publication Westward. He's going to tell us about this bizarre case of shaken baby syndrome. When you hear someone is charged with shaken baby syndrome, don't you just want to shake their heads off with your bare hands? I do, because, like, what the hell? Control yourself, yeah. Well, there is new evidence now that shows some cases of shaken baby syndrome may be totally misdiagnosed and not have anything to do with any sort of abuse. Mr. Prendergast was critical and crucial in helping a woman, her name is Crystal Voss, who was convicted of shaken baby syndrome. He was absolutely critical in getting the verdict overturned, and she's released from prison. Alan will be on a little bit later on the show, but right now, let's join the man with the true crime plan, Levi Page. Hi, Levi.
Hi, Tricia. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're just going to cover a couple of cases here really quickly that have really captured people's attention, and one of them is heartbreaking. This lovely, wonderful young woman, Kanika Jenkins, was partying with her friends in a hotel outside of Chicago. And the friends uploaded video to Facebook. And let me tell you know how teenagers party? Yeah, that's what they were doing. Not totally different than when we were partying, this very heavy-duty partying, you might say. Well, before they know it, it's morning, and they find Kanika Jenkins in a freezer in the hotel, dead. Nobody knows how she got there. Nobody knows what the cause of death is. Levi, you read up on this. What do you think's going on here?
Well, there's a lot of security footage that has been released, and it shows her wandering the hallway. She's staggering. She even has to lean up on the hallways to balance herself. She can barely walk. She's obviously impaired. And this footage starts approximately around 1:30 a.m., and she's still wandering in footage that has a timestamp of around 3:30 a.m. So she spent hours wandering around this hotel, and she somehow finds her way into the kitchen. The kitchen is closed, and according to what a community activist, I forgot his name, but he says that he was shown video by police that say she was staggering around, found her way into the kitchen, and walked into the freezer. It's a big freezer, and the door shut behind her, and
what?
That's how she died. Yes.
But didn't they come back? I think they came back and said, no, there's no video of that. When I read that, I was just like, are you kidding me? I mean, why haven't I seen that?
Family,
why haven't we all seen that?
The family of this 19-year-old, they're denying any sort of association with this community activist. I think his last name is Holmes, Andrew Holmes, if
mm-hmm.
I'm not mistaken. They have denied association with him. They say that they have had conversations with him, but he called them and told them to tell people to leave the hotel alone because the hotel was losing money. So maybe he's connected to the hotel and doesn't necessarily have this family's best interest at heart. I have no idea, but this is a very bizarre situation because, you know, people do a lot of stupid things when they're drunk, but walk into a freezer, that seems extreme. And what's also odd is that she's wandering around this hotel for hours. 2 hours, and is there no security there that is able to help her?
Apparently not. That's what is very frightening. She was impaired a great deal, and so were the people at the party. I can't say everyone was, but most, and so I can understand why nobody would notice her missing. And I do believe it is going to turn out to be a very tragic accident. What I don't understand is why was that freezer left open? Was it definitely a walk-in freezer? Was it on or was it off? I've heard both stories. I've heard she was found frozen. I was heard she was passed out, not frozen. More than likely what happened is whatever freezer it is, she was drunk, she got into it, and went to sleep, I think is what happened. And then hypothermia came in, and boom, it killed her, which is very tragic. But we're not going to know that for a long time. But I'll tell you, I feel like the biggest old fart after looking at those videos of those kids partying. I mean, I thought I was kind of like a cool older woman. No, I'm just out of it. I'm old, and nobody will want to talk to me pretty soon unless I get hip. So we're going to definitely keep on top of that. And Levi, I want to go over with you a case that you and I talked about a lot last week, and that was the missing persons case of Crystal. I just lost her name here, Crystal McDowell. And she disappeared right before Hurricane Harvey. So everybody thought, well, Crystal McDowell, she's Hurricane Harvey got her. No, and the police knew, I think, all along who it was. She was going to her ex-husband's house the morning of Hurricane Harvey when it hit that night. She was going to her ex-husband's house and to pick up their kids. She, according to the ex-husband, never made it there. Now, what was interesting, what was a weird twist on this case, Levi, is she was at her boyfriend's condo, and her boyfriend had footage of her moving around and getting ready to go out to her car to drive to get her kids. But the boyfriend only turned over snapshots, not the video. Now, I'm assuming he did turn over the video eventually, but to me that seemed weird. So I was thinking, boy, could it be that boyfriend? Because what other reason would he have not to turn everything over? But in the end, it was he had been violent before. That's why she divorced him. And she was going to go pick up his kids. His kids were there when their mom was strangled. I mean, Levi, this guy's got to get the death penalty, don't you think?
I'm wondering if he will get the death penalty because he did confess to law enforcement. He did lead law enforcement to her body. I'm thinking that he'll probably plead guilty, and if he pleads guilty, he'll get the death penalty taken off the table and will serve the rest of his life in prison. But I do agree it is extremely callous, not just to kill a mother, but to kill a mother while her children are there in the house. And who knows if these children heard anything. Reports are that they were asleep, but if he strangled her, you would think that she screamed. And there's a chance that they could have heard their own mother scream in her last seconds of her life. Mm-hmm. That is extremely disturbing to think about, Tricia. And this guy, Stephen McDowell, everybody wants to know, what is the motive for this? Apparently, she had booked a cruise, and she was going to go on a cruise trip, and she did not take him, Stephen, her ex, with her. Instead, she planned on taking her boyfriend, the jeweler, with her instead, and that is what pissed him off and made him go over the edge. They got into an argument. This is according to law enforcement, and that's when he strangled her. And we see this all too often when husbands or ex-husbands, when they think that the object of their possession, they think of these women as their possessions, when they see them slowly moving away from them, they snap. And it seems like that's what happened here in this case.
What was even more sad is that the children were probably already frightened because this hurricane was coming, you know, and he picks this time in the middle of this.
Good
this,
point.
Oncoming tragedy. To do something so horrendous, he had no, obviously he had no concern, no love, no compassion for his children at
That's
all.
That's a good point, because you know what I just learned whenever I was reading some of the news reporting on this case is that law enforcement has confirmed that he has been under investigation by CPS in the past, and the quote that came from law enforcement was that he has a history of putting the kids in harm's way.
Oh, good God. Why did he even have them? Why did he? That just infuriates me. In fact, I read he had threatened to kill them both along with their children. You make a threat like that, you lose custody. I'm sorry. No taking chances, bub. You're out.
Well,
you're out.
They
the game
did.
Is over.
They
were with him that night because of the storm, I believe. I read that his
CPS
house was
safer. Let's give CPS some credit. They did take the children away before he was arrested for murder. So they did act right after this young woman, she went missing. Apparently they were doing an investigation of him. They found cause to take the children away. But we see so often, you know, there's warning signs. CPS has been in the picture before,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot of action taken. And who knows, you know, maybe they investigated him and he had people come in on his behalf and say that he's a good father, because I was reading news reports and a lot of the neighbors said that he was a very excellent father, that he was with his kids often. They never had a negative thing to say about him, but apparently he snapped, and I think it's been boiling in him before this murder. Maybe snapped is not the right phrase to use, because right before she was killed, she was messaging a friend on Facebook days earlier, and she said that she was getting a little scared of McDowell.
Really?
Yeah.
That is too bad. You know, and it's, again, like you said, Levi and Bessie, we see this all too often. The guy gets jealous because the ex is going with another guy, and I hate reporting this because I feel like I'm a broken record, and I don't know what else can be done other than deeper supervision, more, and I hate to say this because the last thing we really need is more government interference, but when it comes to threatening kids, I think we need to interfere a lot, and we need to interfere a lot more. Okay, Levi, tell us what's going on in your world.
Okay, so Monday, tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern, I am going to have Beth Karras on my show, and she's going to give her take on the Scott Peterson appeal and the new A&E series that is wrapping up, that is making the case for Scott Peterson's innocence. So we're going to get Beth Karras' thoughts on that. Anyone that doesn't know Beth, she's a former Court TV reporter. She was in Redwood City, California, and covered Scott Peterson's trial every day in 2004. And she knows a lot about this case, and she's going to weigh in on some of the claims that are being made in this A&E series, particularly claims that burglars that robbed a house across the street could have been involved in Lacey's murder. And Beth is not buying that, and I think a lot of people put a lot of stock in what Beth says because she was there at the trial every single day in 2004. And I'm also planning on doing a show on Sherry Papini and Kyron Horman in the future, so that's going to air soon. So just go to iTunes, search Crime and Scandal, and subscribe, and go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/LeviPageTV, and you'll get the link to my podcast.
And Levi, can I just jump in here, please, and say my opinion, because I want to scream it. Shame on A&E. Shame, shame, shame for you to allow this misinformation, these untruths, to be packaged as truth. It's the JonBenet Ramsey case all over again. There was no intruder. And Lacey Peterson, damn it to hell, there was no burglar that did this. Shame on A&E for putting the family through hell just to get ratings. I'm absolutely disgusted, and I'm so glad, Levi, that you are going to have Beth on, because Beth will tear this just right down, and she won't allow for this baloney to continue.
And right? Trisha, you know what's really odd is that the A&E series, it's working in the court of public opinion. If you look at the hashtag, the murder of Lacey Peterson, which is the name of the series, if you go on Twitter, look up the hashtag, people that are watching this documentary are actually find it very compelling, and a lot of people are calling for Scott Peterson to be free.
Oh, my gosh. Bessie, could you go ahead and get Alan on the phone for me? I just want to wrap this up with Levi really quickly. So A&E, it's working. People are starting to believe this baloney, and that could lead to Scott Peterson getting another trial. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. It's just ridiculous.
And you know,
do you think? Go ahead.
You know what's? It's hard to believe that people would actually find it compelling that these burglars would take a pregnant woman and abduct her, and then hold her alive or kill her, and then hold her body, and then find out that Scott Peterson was fishing in the San Francisco Bay off Berkeley Marina in the news, and then go put the body where he was fishing in order to frame him, because that seems to be the theory that they are purporting throwing out there in this new theory, this new series, and it's extremely hard to believe that. I mean, Lacey went missing. People found out that Scott was fishing there, and that is where most of the searches took place. Law enforcement descended on that area. So how would someone be able to go out with a body? I mean, it's possible, but very unlikely, and then plant it there after holding the body captive, maybe alive or dead. So that's just very hard to believe. And also, Tricia, these are burglars, and they caught the people that were responsible for breaking into the home and stealing. And if there was any evidence tying them to Lacey's disappearance, they would have discovered that, because those people were arrested. They were arrested.
They would have known it. They would, yeah. And I believe even they said, no, we didn't do it. Yeah, we did the burglary, but we didn't do this. I mean, they were anxious.
Yes.
They're very anxious because they didn't want to be accused of, they weren't killers. They were just down and out, probably drug addict burglars, which makes it very, very sad and, unbelievable. It doesn't.
And isn't it weird that this is just coming out now, Tricia, when, you know, we had so many theories from the defense back then, and it was, you know, the burglars did it, and they also accused Satanists, remember, a satanic cult did it, because there was another young woman, and A&E is going to talk about this on this series. It's going to air Tuesday. I think it's going to be the series finale. There was another young woman, a Hispanic woman, that was also found dead, and she went missing in May, and her body turned
That's
up.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, in the San Francisco Bay, and apparently she went missing, or her body turned up. I forgot which one on the same day that there is a holiday on the satanic calendar. Lacey went missing, you know, Christmas Eve. So they're trying to connect those two disappearances and say that Satanists did it. The defense tried that in 2002 and in 2004, and nobody really thought that was credible. Because remember in the 80s, there was like this widespread satanic panic, and the FBI has completely discredited that. They said that there are not a lot of satanic rituals or satanic cults that are committing criminal acts. And when you look at, you know, most satanic cults, it's mostly young people who they don't really even believe in Satan. They're more like anti-religion. They're more atheist.
Right. It's not exactly. And I'm not certainly here to defend Satanists in any way, shape, or form.
Yes.
But the little I've read of them, it is not about a deity. It's not about an evil Satan that they worship. It's about they don't want anything to do with religion, and they don't want religion bugging them.
And what they
use
Satan and the imagery to say, well, if you put up the Ten Commandments, we're going to put this up. So they're trying to discourage religion in public places, and they're just using Satan to do it. It's a little, it's weird. It's not something that I believe in, but it's not like what people think of in like horror movies of, you know, these satanic people going out there and killing people and doing rituals and sacrificing people. That was panic in the 80s, and the FBI has discredited that. They said there's not a lot of Satanists out there that are killing people.
Oh, big time. Remember, just real briefly, I think it was in the early 90s or maybe late 80s, the satanic hysteria that happened, and Geraldo did that big special about Satanism and how it's getting to our children, and that was so ridiculous. That was, I mean, do you remember that?
Well, I was not alive then.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Oh, my God. You know what? Get off my show. You're too young. You're way too young.
But I've read about it,
and I've seen
documentaries on it.
Okay. You know what? Next time I see you, I'm really just going to smack you upside the head. can't believe. It just reminds me how old I am. But, yeah, it was just ridiculous. So thank Beth for me in advance for sticking to the truth, and let's make sure this guy does not get a retrial based on a bunch of baloney. I mean, if there is a legitimate reason, and Levi, we talked about this with Scott Peterson about Strawberry Cupcake, or Shortcake, the juror, who didn't reveal that she had filed a restraining order, and the juror is getting in the boat when it wasn't in the water. Those might be legitimate reasons. I hate to say it, and I hope they don't determine that they are legitimate reasons, but that I can see. But this baloney about the people that were, the burglars did it, no, that just irritates me.
Trisha,
to
can
no
I say
end.
One more thing before we go?
Sure.
The boat, the A&E series, they've tackled the question of the boat, and they used some footage that Mark Garagos, Scott Peterson's attorney, provided of the boat shaking when they're trying to throw out weights that weigh the same as Lacey Peterson, 150 pounds, and the boat capsized, and he said that
the employee
that was doing it almost drowned. However,
yeah,
they did have an expert that testified for the prosecution that said that that type of boat that Scott used, I forgot the name, but it could have easily handled 150 pounds.
Exactly, and didn't the prosecution
And they didn't mention that
either.
In the series. They did not mention that prosecution expert.
Yeah, of course not, because they want to get this trial for retrial for Scott Peterson because it means money, and that is what is so. Oh God, I'm just.
It's
disgusted.
All because of the Making a Murderer series that was a
exactly.
huge hit on Netflix, which, by
mm-hmm.
the way, they could everything on there could be true on Making a Murderer. I'm not saying that Making a Murderer is a lie, so those people
right.
don't come at me. But I think that a lot of people in the entertainment business look at the success of that and then are looking at other cases to sort of copycat that.
That's exactly right, Levi, and we'll leave it at that. Levi Page, looking forward to your next show. We'll be in touch, my friend, my young friend, my very young friend. Thank you so much.
Well, I was
Take
just a little
now.
Kid when all that happened yep. in the 80s.
I'm telling you, I'm just going to smack you. You've lost it now. You're in trouble. See you later.
Bye.
Okay,
bye,
shaken baby syndrome. Now, we've heard it time and time again, and it's usually some random boyfriend of the mother. Mom had to go to work, so she leaves her three-week-old baby with the boyfriend, and the boyfriend gets upset and frustrated, shakes the baby, causes major brain injuries, and usually the baby dies. Shaken baby syndrome, easy to prove, right? That's what I thought. Not so fast, everybody. Let's welcome Alan Prendergast from Westward. Now, let me just say something about Westward. It's by far one of the most reliable and best publications out there, in my opinion. Alan has done amazing work on the JonBenet Ramsey case, but tonight we're going to talk about shaken baby syndrome and why this case should scare people, because false convictions happen, and it happened in the case we're going to talk about with Alan tonight. Alan, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio.
Good to be here, Tricia. Thanks for asking me.
Okay, so let's talk about Crystal Voss. This is somebody that you did several articles on, and I believe you did a lot of work behind the scenes. Crystal Voss, the short story is she was arrested. She confessed to shaking her baby, and she went away to prison. I believe it was 13 years later, her prison sentence was overturned. And
yes.
how that all went down
yeah.
is just amazing. So, Alan, why don't you start?
Well, I followed this case, you're right, since 2003, and it always struck me as strange from the beginning. I mean, this was, you're right. I mean, if you look at it just from the numbers, it seemed like a typical sort of child abuse case, which was, you
mm-hmm.
know, she was this young mother. She came to the hospital with her 19-month-old toddler who was limp and unresponsive and said, well, he fell off the shoulders of the babysitter who was watching him while she was at work.
Mm-hmm.
And that story worked for a while, and then people thought, well, the injuries are too severe to have occurred from a fall. And the boyfriend / babysitter started changing his story and blaming her. And she ultimately, in a situation with the police, admitted doing something to the kid the night before, that maybe she jostled him, maybe she shook him. Anyway, it was enough that they considered it to be a confession. And she was convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison for fatal child abuse, because the boy eventually died from these severe head injury that he had. But from the beginning, I thought there was something odd about this. For one thing, she was talking to me against her lawyer's advice before the trial. Guilty people usually don't talk to me.
And
she rejected a plea bargain, which would have given her only 5 years. Both of which I thought were kind of strange. And then I looked into this whole thing about the science of shaken babies, and it turned out to be a lot of junk science. Even the coroner who did the autopsy on this case said, I don't believe in shaken baby syndrome. Doesn't mean that there aren't people who severely injure their child and violently shake them. I'm not saying that that's a good thing to do. But the biomechanics of it is more complicated than that. And clearly there was something that just struck me from the beginning. Whatever she did the night before would not have influenced why she was breaking the kid to the hospital the next day, because the kid was fine the next morning. Her husband, there are various other witnesses that saw the kid laughing and playing. So whatever she did not cause these injuries. The injuries happened when she turned him over to this babysitter. And the defense, I think, her defense, made the wrong move. They basically decided to try to make it out that the babysitter had done all this, and that he was lying when he said that the kid fell off his shoulders. They didn't attack the science of shaken baby syndrome, which, in fact, maybe it was a fall. It turns out now that a fall can cause these injuries. The whole shaken baby thing is based on the idea that there's a unique triad of symptoms that can only be caused by violently shaking a baby, and that turns out not to be true. And, in fact, sometimes these cases that are presented as shaken babies are, in fact, accidental falls, or something else. That doesn't mean everyone who's been convicted of this is innocent, but it does mean in this case that they really had very little evidence other than some sort of bogus expert testimony that sent this woman away for 20 years.
Can I stop you for 1 second? Because I want to touch on that for just a little bit, because shaken baby syndrome, it's huge. Everybody's heard about it. I mean, Law and Order, once a season they have something on shaken baby syndrome, it seems like. But when you use the word junk science, all of a sudden that just discredits anything about shaken baby syndrome. Did you discover in your investigation something that shaken baby syndrome, it can't work the way the doctors said it worked? Or what did you find out? Why is it junk science?
Let's go back. The famous shaken baby case, and maybe the watershed case, is the Louise Woodward case, the British nanny.
Yes.
Remember that case?
This
was 20 years ago. She was watching a baby in Massachusetts. It became this big case on Cork TV where, they said that she shook the baby violently and she was saying she didn't do anything. And at first she was convicted, and then there was an appeal, and she ended up, I think, convicted of voluntary manslaughter. But in the course of that case, a lot of stuff came out about, what really is the underlying basis of this science? And it turns out it goes back to some theories that were presented in the 70s to try to explain cases where you have severe head injuries but no obvious signs of impact. So the theory is, okay, well, somebody violently shook the kid. But, yeah, in my research I found out, actually this was never really proven. And, in fact, the Woodward case was the beginning of the turning point where people were starting to wonder if this really was science. In fact, one of the key witnesses for the prosecution in that case later became one of the great debunkers of shaken baby syndrome.
Really?
His name is Patrick Barnes. He's a he's a pediatric neuroradiologist, if you can imagine a specialty that acute.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's one of the people who testified in Crystal Voss's appeal, saying this looks like it could have been an accidental fall, and here's why. And he's done the research. Barnes testified against Louise Woodward, but he saw what the defense did, and he started to question the premises of shaken baby syndrome. He's regarded as a traitor now by people who believe in shaken baby syndrome because he testifies against it frequently. And he was one of the experts that Crystal Voss was able to bring into the case to say, wait a minute, there should have been some evidence presented at trial that showed that this is not accepted science, that it's in fact in great dispute.
That's interesting, because first I've heard about it was this case about it being in dispute. But I'm sorry, continue, Alan.
Well, I mean, there was a combination of things that went wrong here. Part of it's junk science, part of it's bad police work. Here's what happens in this typical sort of shaken baby scenario. is that a child is brought in with suspicious injuries. I'm not saying they shouldn't mm-hmm. investigate it, but that then the experts, the child abuse experts, the ones who do believe in shaken baby syndrome, come back to the police and say, this could only have been a violent shaking. And this is mm-hmm. the premise that this is all hinges on, and which I think is wrong. Then the police go back and essentially try to get a confession. Well, frequently,
right.
I mean, particularly someone like Crystal Voss is incredibly vulnerable at that moment. I mean, you've lost your child.
Sure.
You don't know what happened. You're blaming yourself. And then the cops mm-hmm. come along and say, you must have done something, because that's what the science, that's what the doctors are telling us. And so you
mm-hmm.
more or less begin to admit, well, maybe I jostled the kid the night before. I was frustrated with him. Yeah, maybe I shook him a little bit. What,
mm-hmm.
what's missing from this is, first of all, the biomechanics of it. They've done studies on primates. Now, obviously, you can't test shaken baby syndrome, right? I mean, you can't really,
mm-hmm.
you can't really
right.
do the tests to see whether it works. But what the primate tests suggest is that if you shook a child severely enough to cause these kinds of brain injuries, you would also see neck injuries. Those neck injuries
mm-hmm.
are almost never seen in these shaken baby cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one problem with this sort of thing. And it's rarely brought up in court, mm-hmm. but it's like, wait a minute. If you would expect a kid who's been shaken so violently that there's this shearing action in the brain and this swelling and subdural hematoma,
mm-hmm.
you would expect there also to be some damage to the neck from just this whiplash effect. And you almost
mm-hmm.
never see that. So there's a problem there, but this case followed a sort of a classic pattern. As they come back to, the cops are told, essentially, look, this looks like a shaken baby case. This is not a fall.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't have been a fall, which is another problem, because, in fact, we've learned since then that even a short fall can lead to a subdural hematoma in a very young child. And this kid was sitting on somebody's shoulders. The original story
yeah.
of the babysitter was he was playing and he tripped. He
mm-hmm.
fell on top of the kid.
Very
so,
logical. Absolutely could happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sort of, I believe in Occam's razor sometimes with these kind of cases.
Yeah.
The simple explanation is really the best, the
mm-hmm.
most obvious explanation. In this case, the initial explanation was it was a fall. But because the police didn't believe that, they went back to the babysitter. They said, we don't believe he fell off your shoulders. You better come up with another story. And so he says, okay, well, she did it, and she convinced me to lie for her.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh
so then
God.
They go back to her and they say, "This you must have done something." And she says, "Well, maybe I did something the night before because
mm-hmm.
I was frustrated with him. I was having trouble getting to sleep, and he was crying and fussy, and I might have jostled him a bit."
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, that looks like a confession.
There you
and this
go.
This is, you know, a confession obtained from someone who hasn't had sleep for several days and is worried about their child who's in, you know, intensive care and.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the whole thing just struck me as really suspicious. And then over time, she found the scientific experts to help her to make the appeal to say, yeah, I mean, we should have been able to present some evidence about this shaken baby thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was ultimately what got her out.
Just a second, I lost my train of thought. I had a brilliant question, Alan, probably the most brilliant question ever in the history of the world. And I have totally lost it. Okay, so the boyfriend, well, actually, he wasn't a boyfriend. He was a babysitter. Crystal had an open marriage, kind of.
This is partly,
it was very
I think, what worked against her at trial, too, was that
That's
she and her husband
asking,
had kind of an
problem.
Open marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And this babysitter was someone who had she had a relationship with and who was watching the kid, and they were supposed to go off to Denver together later. And this struck the police is incredibly strange, you know, that this,
mm-hmm.
this man who has a family of his own would come down and watch this baby in this rural area of southern Colorado. And so they thought that because of the sexual relationship she'd had with this guy, he was willing to lie for her and cover for her. And so that's
mm-hmm.
what sort of started this wedge of, well, your story doesn't add up and you've got to tell a different story, and sort of turning them against each other and making him the star witness against her. But you know, I mean, obviously there are a lot of things, if they had been a little different in this case, then maybe it wouldn't have ended up the way it did. But she
mm-hmm.
went to prison for the better part of a decade. She never stopped insisting on her innocence. In fact, she could have had parole several times over if she just simply admitted that she'd done this and she was sorry or something like that. She refused to do that, and they never gave her parole.
Well, how did the husband feel? How did her husband feel? Was he with her?
Her husband, I think, was very conflicted about this. I think he always believed that she didn't do anything to the baby because he was the one the next morning who saw the baby and said, well, whatever she did the night before, it wasn't affecting the child. And we learned that these kinds of injuries, this kind of severe head injury, the symptoms would have been immediate. So so if she had done anything to him, it didn't affect how he was behaving the next day. And so you have to sort of discount her confession. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't have anything to do with why, you know, ultimately this child suffered this injury. So you either have to believe the boyfriend did something, the boyfriend slash babysitter did something terrible to the child, and there was no motive for him to do that. I mean, it's sort of, I think that was a problem for the defense. They were trying to blame him, and there was no real explanation for why he would do something to this child. I mean, why he would have this sudden rage to shake this child, you know.
To kill him. Alan, let me just tell everybody, we're talking with Alan Prendergast from Westward, and he's talking about a case involving Crystal Voss and shaken baby syndrome. Crystal was convicted of shaking her baby. She was sentenced, I believe, to 20 years. She served 13. And lo and behold, they have been finding out now that shaken baby syndrome perhaps is not what everybody thought it was. And Crystal Voss has since been released. So right now we're kind of at where she's been interrogated and the boyfriend babysitter turned against her, right? Turned state's witness against her.
Yes, he became the state's star witness. He was the one that was going to court and say, well, it wasn't really a fall. I got there, the kid was already injured, and Crystal convinced me to say that he fell off my shoulders. And that in itself is a strange story. But as I said, I mean, it was hard to believe that he shook the baby. And everybody was convinced that this kind of injury could not be caused by a fall. In fact, I mean, and Crystal's appeal, essentially the argument is, yeah, what the guy said originally was true, was that the boy, he simply tripped, the boy fell off his shoulders, he suffered a severe head injury. And these experts who have looked at this case and essentially are the ones that made the argument that she deserved a new trial, at the very least, basically agreed. They said, yeah, this could have been an accidental fall, and there's nothing in the record that suggests otherwise. And in fact, we have a lot of problems with the idea that anybody could have shaken this baby intensively enough to cause these injuries, and there would not also be corresponding neck injuries.
So Crystal Voss, she found guilty. She is in prison for 13 years, knowing every single moment of every day she is absolutely innocent of harming her child.
Well, it's hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, not only that you're innocent, but you lost your child.
Yeah.
You're being blamed for that.
Imagine.
I mean, her whole family's been destroyed, and she's sent to prison. It's to me, it's unimaginable to go through that.
And it shouldn't have happened.
No, and I think in another jurisdiction, maybe it wouldn't have happened. I mean, I think she, you know, the reason that they overturned the conviction, the ostensible reason, prosecution never admits they did anything wrong, right? I mean, they
of
just
course.
Say, oh, she had inadequate counsel. They should have presented their own expert witnesses about why this shaking didn't happen. So there's never anybody saying, you know, she's not officially exonerated or anything like that. She's just told, okay, well, your lawyers didn't do a good job for you, so we're going to dismiss the case. You know, it's frustrating in a lot of ways, but I think she had the kind of determination. She just wasn't going to give up. I mean, she wasn't going to admit that she did something she didn't do in order to get out of prison earlier, and she was going to work on clearing her name. So she spent years working on this appeal and found a good lawyer, and I think she was fortunate in some ways. She got some top experts who understand about the shaken baby syndrome to sort of convince the judge that, yeah, this is not really science. It's a little scary to think about, you know, how many people probably have been convicted of shaking babies.
Oh,
and maybe some of them did some child abuse. But There are hundreds of people, I think.
I'd not be surprised if there's thousands. I mean, that was a very common charge. And almost all the time, people are found guilty. And you're right. And, Alan, I think a lot of people still have trouble is, you know, well, why did you confess? Why did you say this? Like you said, she had no sleep. She had just lost her child. She's trying to figure out, gosh, did I do something with that? What did I do? You know, and we're seeing it happen more and more. But thank goodness, I think people are finally getting the hint that you can't drag a confession out of somebody when they've had no sleep and they're that emotional.
I saw somewhere a statistic that the conviction rate in these cases was something like 95%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's astonishing to me. It's sort of like the Salem witch trials, you know. I mean, you get people, it's sort of an inherently coercive situation. You've got somebody, a caregiver that's just lost a child, a parent, and they want to find an answer. And a lot of times if an innocent person is going to feel, I must have done something, you know, they're just going to feel so bad about the situation.
Well,
and they're reproaching themselves already. They're very vulnerable to a coerced confession. And that's
what happens
in a lot of these cases.
Anybody who loses a child, any mother who loses a child is going to feel some guilt, whether they did anything to cause their death or not. And so a lot can be read into that guilt initially, and then that person can be made a victim.
Absolutely. So now she's been convicted. She's working on this appeal. What led her to understand that the shaken baby syndrome was not legitimate in her case? How did she come about that?
Well, I think several things. She educated herself about it. She read a lot in the literature on it. She found these experts like Patrick Barnes, who had, as I said, had been one of the proponents of shaken baby syndrome. And then during the course of the Louise Woodward trial, and looking at the defense arguments, he started to think, wait a minute, there's a real gap here between what we know and what we're hypothesizing out of this. And so I think she worked on that for a long time. There's also been, I think, a general, in the medical community, there's been an increasing split about this. I mean, there are still people who will advocate that, I mean, there's a shaken baby syndrome, foundation that still defends this, but I think there are also a lot of pediatricians, there are a lot of people who have begun to question this, and there was a documentary not too long ago called The Syndrome by a couple of excellent journalists. One is director Merrill Goldsmith, and the other is her cousin Susan Goldsmith, who I know, who has worked for the LA Weekly that was like Westward, and they really dug into this a bit and talked to a lot of legal experts and talked to a lot of medical experts about what the limitations were to this theory and how it evolved over the years. It turns out, in fact, that the three leading proponents of shaken baby syndrome are these doctors who were also in the 80s very involved in perpetuating the idea of satanic ritual abuse. You remember all those cases involving elementary
God,
schools?
Oh, God, do I ever. We were just talking
about
that.
And these people being
Levi
sent
Page.
Away for years for doing all these satanic rituals on children.
Ridiculous.
You know, and many of them were completely innocent. The interview process itself planted ideas in these kids' minds about things that might have happened. They were very suggestible. and people ended up spending years in prison over this stuff.
It was like a disease that swept over the nation. It was.
It was hysteria.
How many people were accused
and that's why,
of hysteria,
I guess that's why
right?
I bring up the Salem witch trials, because there's that same element of hysteria about shaken babies. I mean, you remember those ads, don't ever, ever shake a baby. You know, they were, there's all this well-meaning sort of public service stuff about, I mean, child abuse is a real problem. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that there aren't people who do terrible things to children. And,
of course,
you know, violently shaking a child is never a good idea. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But the way this was sort of codified into a pseudoscience was kind of interesting to me. And, this woman really bore the brunt of it, because at the time she was convicted, this was what the gospel was that, this kid has a subdural hematoma. This couldn't have been caused by a fall. This had to have been a shaking, a violent shaking. And in fact, we've since known many cases where these kind of injuries can come from a fall. So it's not a slam dunk, I guess is what I'm saying.
Exactly. So a fall is much easier to explain as an accident, obviously, than shaken baby syndrome. And I'm wondering now how all of the courts will start to deal with these appeals that will be coming up, because they're going to get a lot of them, I'm sure.
Oh, I think you're right, yes.
With Crystal Voss.
Well, I think they're going to find a way to deal with them. I mean, in this case, I think it's instructive. Like I said, the prosecution never admitted doing anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The police never admitted doing anything wrong.
Right.
All they did was say, well, she had inadequate counsel, so or ineffective assistance of counsel is, I think, the term, which is a constitutional violation. So she deserves a new trial. And then the prosecution turns around and dismisses it because they're saying, hey, you know, this was 13 years ago. We can't get the same witnesses. We wouldn't have the same recall. And we're overworked anyway. And she's already served all this time. So in the interest of justice, we'll dismiss the case. But that's not saying we're admitting anything wrong.
Yeah, and that does not really mean justice for Crystal Voss. It would be nice if they said, stepped up to the plate and said, we looked at the evidence incorrectly, and we're, you know, going forward from this point on, we're going to do things in a better way. But that is me just dreaming, I know. So her case is actually, Crystal Voss's case has actually been dismissed. So she has not been convicted.
Yes, what happened was first, she got a ruling after all these years that she deserved a new trial. And then the prosecution's faced with either, well, what do we do? Do we appeal this decision? Do we go ahead and try the case again, knowing we're probably going to lose? Or do we dismiss it and basically say, okay, no harm, no foul? And that's what they did. But they didn't apologize. They didn't exonerate her. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we expect the prosecution to stand up for the people, but really they're there to sort of do whatever is in the interest of justice. And I don't think justice is really done here. I mean, certainly a grieving mother that spends all this time in prison after the loss of her child, that's a pretty awful
thing.
That's
not justice. Her appeal, was it pretty pretty strong, stout? Was it like just boom, wow, that's no way
she's
going to lose
this appeal?
I thought so.
It was very lengthy. It was very detailed. It had all these affidavits, and then she was able to bring in these people to actually testify, these experts, about what does or doesn't cause these kinds of injuries. And all of them, looking at the, and of course they just had to work from the records. You know, they were provided the full records from the child's injuries and court records and all of that. But they basically all had this incredible ringing consensus that, you know, there's more than reasonable doubt here. And the other thing that makes reasonable doubt is the coroner himself. And this is the guy who I interviewed back in 2003 who told me, I don't believe in shaken baby syndrome. That's what originally got me thinking about this, was not only was she saying she didn't do anything wrong, but the person performing the autopsy said, yeah, something, there was some kind of hip trauma here, but I can't say whether it was a shaking or not.
Right.
So even the coroner is saying that they don't know what the exact manner of death is. And years later, when he's questioned about this, he says, well, you know, if anybody had asked me, I probably would have changed my finding from homicide to undetermined.
Oh, wow.
So there's reasonable doubt right there.
Right there. I'll say that's
not going
further. Yeah,
you know, it's like if you come in and say, how did this kid die? What does it say on the death certificate? It says it was undetermined. Okay, case dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, you don't have a coroner in your corner saying, oh, this had to have happened this way. This is just some child abuse expert's theory.
So now Crystal Voss is out and out of prison. How is she
just
doing?
The last few weeks. She was out, but she wasn't out, meaning that she had done. She had been a model prisoner in the Department of Corrections. They had moved her to a halfway house where she's still technically in custody, but she's working in the community. She had her own apartment. She had a job. She had an ankle monitor. I mean, they could have put her back in prison at any time if she did anything wrong, but she never had parole. So she was essentially living and working in the community, and what they did was they took her ankle monitor off and said, okay, you're free, goodbye.
And so she
and,
have to
you know,
check
I think
in
now
or
she's going
to
be able to put her pieces of her life back together to the extent
Is
anyone can.
Is she still
can.
With her husband? I hope she's still with her husband.
No, they divorced in the course of this. You know, she was in prison a long time. And I think, you know, I can't fault anybody if they want to get on with their lives in that situation.
Right. Well,
but Alan, you know, she has a network of friends, and she's, you know, she's a functional person again. She doesn't have to be looking over her shoulder. I think the next thing she wants to do is get her record expunged. I mean, technically, she hasn't been convicted of a felony, right? But it's still difficult to get work when you have to explain that you were in the Department of Corrections all those years.
That's why you weren't working, because you were falsely accused of something.
Right.
I think, Alan, I think you should write a book. I think you two should write a book or a screenplay.
Yeah, well,
something.
I think she's probably working on something. I mean, her story is a pretty amazing one.
It's very compelling.
And the sad thing is it's not, I mean, it's unique in the sense that that not everybody has gone through what she's gone through. I mean, it's hard to think about that. But that there are so many people who have been caught in similar situations. I mean, again, I would urge people, if they're interested in this subject, to seek out this documentary called The Syndrome, because it talks about this kind of thing. And what Crystal Voss went through was horrible. It was not completely, you know, isolated. And that, to me, is really disturbing.
That's very, very disturbing. Well, Alan, I am so glad we had you on. It's been years since you've been on, and I saw that.
Well, we'll do that again sometime. We should do another JonBenet show at some point.
Oh, we need to, and I need to tell everybody that Alan Prendergast, he is the guy that stood up to everybody in the JonBenet Ramsey case. When Professor Michael Tracy was getting away with all his bull crap, and that's going deep into the case, it was Alan that stood up to him, and I will always admire you, Alan, because so many people were backing down. I don't know what they're afraid of, but you should never be afraid of the truth.
There were a lot of people in your Web Sleuths network who were also on board with that. I got a lot of help there.
Well, thank you. But anyway, we'll have you back on again real soon. Do you have anything coming up that we should be looking out for?
Well, I don't know that I have that much that's true crime related at the moment, but, you know, we'll keep in touch and figure it out.
Absolutely. We're here, Alan. Just call us. We'll be right there with you, okay?
Thanks, Tricia. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Alan. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bessie, didn't you always think, until I read this, I thought shaken baby syndrome was a black and white issue, done deal, the person shook the baby's head, baby died, person goes to prison. Apparently, now the experts are turning it on its head. Did that surprise you?
No. I'm not surprised. No, I'm not surprised at all. you know, things happen. And like I said, I think that prosecutors take advantage of parents who feel guilty, and so they appear guilty. And I think you can compare it also to SID, you know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Right.
Yeah. That sometimes, you know, sometimes those parents are not guilty. On the other hand, you may have some that are guilty, and they get off because they call it SID. It's so important on what, you know, the coroner findings are so important. What I don't understand didn't quite understand in this case is what he said, that the coroner said if anyone had asked him, he would have said undetermined. Well, why wasn't the coroner's report a part of the evidence?
Well, I think it was, but I think he had put down homicide at first. No, maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't. Yeah, because he was the one that didn't believe in shaken baby syndrome. I don't know. That's a good question. And I don't know why her defense didn't find him and put him on the stand. That's the other thing. What a great witness. You know, the city's coroner says baloney.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much par for the course. You know, in any homicide case, that the coroner's report is brought in as evidence. So, if you had a coroner who said it was undetermined, right there, that, you know, there's no case. I'm kind of curious about that. But no, I've never believed that shaken baby, you know, just automatically assumed it meant you know, that a parent murdered the child.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did. It was. I feel terrible now because I would be like, you know, you bastard. Why you're? This is your girlfriend's baby, and you shook it. Well, you scumbag. You know, because I'm so emotional about when children get hurt, and now I feel bad. Fortunately, I was yelling at the TV and not the actual person. So they didn't hear what I was saying. That's very good. Okay, Bessie, we're going to be back next week. We're really glad you're back and doing great. And we have a lot planned for you before the end of the year. So, Bessie, we'll see you next week on Web Sleuths Radio, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
Take care. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will be back next week, same place, same time. It's Web Sleuths Radio, 8 o'clock Eastern. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.